Well, we've got a litany of things to talk with Bill Gladstone about. My gosh, the Mayan calendar date that came and went. Doomsday theories, ETs, you name it, we've got it on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Bill Gladstone with us, your calls as well. Bill, let's talk a little bit more about consciousness as it applies to things that are going on in the universe. How powerful do you think that is?
Well, one of my clients is HeartMath, and they've done studies that show that the resonance that is created by positive thinking of groups can actually alter the random number generators at Princeton University. And so there's no question, but from a scientific perspective, that human thought and human consciousness does impact physical events. And they've also done studies that show when there are things like 9/11, you know, there are changes that are in the random generation of numbers just from the emotions of human beings.
Simple as that. Do you think the consciousness, the power of the mind, has the ability to do incredible things?
Absolutely. I mean, we have barely tapped it. And studies that I've done, I think I mentioned earlier, there's Amazonian tribes that actually had cultivated the use of telepathy as their primary means of communication. They didn't have the internet and phones and all those things, but they did learn how to use telepathy. My friend Jose Arguelles, before he passed, was working on creating centers to teach people how to master telepathy. So that's just one example that very likely 50 years from now will be very common.
Let's take some calls. We'll go to JD in Las Vegas to get things going. Hi, JD. Thanks for calling.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, very well.
I have a couple of points here. You know, the first thing that hits me is reading. Well, let's just take education. I wish people would read as much as they did 20 years ago or 25 years ago. And, you know, I'm a teacher. Our history books are a mess. You know, we're told to turn on the TV and watch the president, you know, lie. Oh, you can keep your own doctor. There was a whole seminar on that. And now the kids are going, yeah, I got a nurse practitioner anyway. But another thing I wanted to say was, I work hard for my money, and I put away, and I save, and I see the world getting going in the wrong direction as far as, you know, and by the numbers, you can look at the people on food stamps and welfare, and they need money, and there's not going to be jobs. My western borders are going to be, you know, I love the Latinos, but California is going to be Mexico here real quick. I'm saying in the next 50 years, and that's what I try to do is to find a nice piece of consciousness, you know, to meditate. I've never been taught or anything. I just kind of close my eyes and then kind of focus on the good things that I have. But for every time I do that, there's 10 people that want what I have, which isn't much, you know, it really isn't much. And it saddens me. I had no kids. I didn't have any children. So, but I have nieces and nephews, and it worries the heck out of me, you know, the world that they're being brought up into with Miley Cyrus and all this stuff sends you the wrong way. I didn't want to tell. I know you got a lot of callers, but, George, I love your show. And I wish more people would do more reading, and there should be a class in school that teaches you what your doctor is speaking about right now. You know, open your mind up to it, find out where your interests are, you know, like you did as far as science and space, and find that interest early, you know.
Well,
remember, you're in charge of you.
I agree with that. Nobody else is going to take care of you unless you take care of yourself, no doubt.
And just as the optimist, let me just say that there's a lot of information available that is positive. We have tappingthesourcethemovie.com site, and there's courses that actually teach how to meditate. We wrote a book, Tapping the Source, which simplifies the master key system that Charles Pennell brought to Napoleon Hill 100 years ago. There are resources available. I agree with the caller that, you know, there's a lot of negativity out there, but it's not too late to change, and the change starts with each and every one of us. All we can do is be the best human being we can be, and absolutely encourage reading, including self-education. I don't think we can rely on the schools anymore to do the job. Too often the schools are based just on getting test scores, which don't necessarily correlate with truly educated people. So I think that we all need to be very active, whether we have children or not, but encouraging reading, encouraging the use of the internet in a positive way.
We're going through a magnetic pole shift. Do you think it's going to affect us?
Absolutely. Everybody is on edge. It's the best of times, the worst of times. We're going to see the extremes. We're going to see a lot of people acting very badly, but there's also a lot of people who are waking up and are starting to realize that they have to not wait for leaders, but to become leaders themselves.
Next up, we go to James in Oregon. Welcome to the show, James. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi. I'm a first-time caller.
Oh, great.
And I enjoy Coast to Coast, and I'm really into tonight's show.
Thank you,
James. Listening to what's being said about the energy of oneself and the consciousness and the spirituality of things, I have this to say real briefly, that in June of 2011, I was walking and I stepped in. I had something to say. I didn't care who it was in there, but it needed to come out. Lo and behold, I walked into a room where there was priests and pastors who were in a meeting. And I went in, and long story short, I sat down with them. They were interested. And I literally gave them a timeline for a little over 2 years of events that were going to be taking place in the United States and around the world, and described that to them. And anyway, it was written down. And these things have come to pass, and flabbergasted by it. They don't know what to think about it. I told them to tell the authorities. They did. There's a big story behind all this. And with me, it's more of a spiritual thing, a little like a knock on the door to let people know that changes are is coming to the planet. Briefly, one of the things to take place was the booms, the mysterious booms that were around the world. They didn't know where it was coming from. And the flashes and no explanations. And that's just one. And briefly, I tried to get a hold of Linda Moulton Howe. I got to meet her briefly. And
good reporter.
She is busy. Oh yeah, I like her. She's very good.
Do you need her email address? I can give that to you. Do you need her email address? I can give that to you.
No, I have that. I just briefly tried, and I handed her a note, and I just let it go at that. And if it happened, it happened. If not, okay, because I know she's busy. But there's a big, huge story behind this, and NSA, I know, has been involved.
Well, you're right in the middle of all that stuff, no doubt. You know, the NSA, Bill, we talked about it just briefly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are they out of control?
Absolutely out of control. Absolutely. Waste of taxpayers. I mean, there's so much paranoia and so much time and attention being spent recording information that really is not vital to the security of this country, and overreacting when those resources could be much better spent on being the nation that we were 40, 50 years ago. I mean, we did more good with the Marshall Plan than all of our military protection could ever do. It's being good corporate government for ourselves and for our allies, and allowing the goodness and the productivity of our country to serve as the ultimate protection. we need a standing army. We need to have some surveillance. We need to, you know, but we've gone so far in the wrong direction.
Too far in the wrong direction. Let's go to Catherine in Toronto, International Line. Hi, Catherine. Go ahead.
Greetings. Nice to speak to you folks tonight.
You too.
I have two things I want to say. The thing about the Nazca lines is I've always thought that they were, those people were doing a lot of astral projection so that when you're coming back, you want to be able to have that lines to see to come down, maybe.
Sure.
That's a and good explanation. Like, it's as good as any I've heard. I mean, I met with many of the Peruvians who live in that area, and they, at least the people that I met with, really had no more insight into it than you or I.
Right. I've always thought, because I know when I leave my body, when I come back, I, you know, I have a red sheets on my red sheets and blankets so that I know I'm coming back to this room.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I was going to make a point, I would ask about, is that my family, we had oil, you know, when I was a kid, my dad was an oil man. And so one day I remember asking him about, we're taking all the oil and gas out of the ground, so when you're putting mud back in, aren't we going to blow up? Because you would if you were an engine.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about that?
Well, I think you were very precocious as a child. I think that we are harming our planet, particularly with this new fracking, and that we've got to start focusing on alternative energy and a lot faster than, you know, I can't believe, you know, our government is saying, oh, fracking, that's going to solve our oil dependency.
No way.
You know, it's just wrong-headed thinking. It's short-term thinking. I mean, even if they were correct in their projections, okay, so they delay for 30 years the dependence on, you know, outside energy sources. 30 years will pass very quickly and will be in worse shape than if we had started now. So, you know, we need to change the thinking at the top, and we need to be aware that there are vested interests that are working together, whether, you know, in a conspiracy or not, that need to be stopped, and we need to find a way to stop them.
Next up, we have Brian in Orlando, Florida. Welcome to the show, Brian. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How are you guys?
Good.
I love this show.
Thank you.
You know, when you said your table of 13, 12, I thought it was like a table of 13. Obviously, when you get that deep into talking about the people that's running the planet Earth or the families, you say 30,000. I kind of believe it's a lot less than that. Actually.
Oh, I absolutely think it's less. I mean, in my novel, The Power of 12, I say there's 319. Yeah. I was just making the reference that it could be as many as 30,000, but it's probably closer to 319. I've heard estimates of 3,000. Because I was writing a novel, it's more dramatic to just have it be 319. But I agree with you. I think it is less than 30,000.
Right.
But
we don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually think that we basically, on this planet Earth, everyone's wondering about politics. And, you know, in order for us to evolve, we have to planet hop. And, you know, the funny thing is about it is I already know Illuminati is in and out of this solar system. And with all the technologies that they've obtained and talking about the families that's running the planet Earth, I believe from eons they had to have kept this on the hush-hush. And in order to evolve, I believe they are some of the ancient aliens. And whether some of them went rogue or not and time travel, but from eons, they've kept the identity of we have to, even from the ancient pharaoh, ancient Egyptian days, they said, you know what, we have to keep this on a hush-hush. Every knowledge that we obtain, whether it's mystical or whatever we have to do, we have to keep it on a hush-hush. And so I believe they've already journeyed out of this galaxy. Listen, and I believe they've already started to seed and apply and have more and find other super Earth or whatever and kept it on a hush-hush and already started to come up with their own god and have drones or whatever. I mean, you know, have clones or whatever. And they're populating. See, they're not going to let us know on this Earth that they're populating, but the secret to have our species, the Homo sapiens, to continue, even if you have to dumb it down to clones, I mean drones, clones and add drones, You have to planet hop. And I believe they planet hopped, and they already found other planets, and they're just coming up with a new god, and they're just going to govern these beings, because it's all about planet hopping. If we don't planet hop, Homo sapiens would cease to exist. And so that's why all of the mysticals and all the magic and all of the knowledge they kept on hush hush, we're going to be doomed to stay on this earth, the citizens that's living on this earth now.
You're absolutely right, Brandon. I think they've been hopping here, Bill.
Well, whether they're hopping, I mean, we is, you know, them is us. I talk about in my novel, The Power of 12, the idea of walk-ins. I think that there are alien intelligences inhabiting human beings, and I don't know the grand design and the ultimate plan, and I think there is good and evil, and I think there's good aliens and there's bad aliens, and I think there's a struggle that is constant between light and dark, and it's playing out on Earth. And I think because Earth is a free will planet, it's probably the most crucial planet in the universe.
Sure.
For how the ultimate game is being played. From the point of view of consciousness, it is just a game. And from the point of view of infinity, it doesn't really matter whether we blow up or we don't blow up, because there's infinite time. So everything will be recreated in its time. But to us as human beings, it matters a great deal, because we have finite lives and we have finite destinies and we have legacies. And so I think it's more fun to align ourselves with the good and with the light than with the dark.
Are you a believer in man-made climate change?
I am.
You are. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's a combination.
So I think it's a cycle.
Yeah, there's definitely cycles, and it's not all just human behavior, but you can't deny, you know, the impact of our technology and the carbon and the changes. I mean, you know, there's no conspiracy among scientists to create fear of global warming. It's a phenomena that is occurring, and that, yes, it has occurred naturally in the past, but we're definitely contributing to it. And why should we ignore the coming danger, particularly when we have scientific evidence, you know, documenting things like the Permian extinction, which shows that global warming can destroy life as we know it on this planet.
Well, maybe so. Give us your website and where your books are available. We'll take a break, Bill, and we'll come back with final calls.
WilliamGladstone.org is the best site. I have a blog I'm writing 3 times a week. You can get the free blog, and there's information about, you can get all my books, The Power of 12, The 12, Tapping the Source. They're all available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and your local bookstore.
And you love to write, don't you?
I do. I write. I just have a ball. If nothing else, I enjoy my novels. But fortunately, I've had a lot of good reviews. And, you know, I think we're getting close to 500,000 copies of the 12.
And you're still representing all those folks that you work with?
Yeah, I still work with Eckhart and with Neil Donald Walsh and Gene Houston and Irvin Laszlo and Tom Hartman. And, you know, it's really a pleasure to just get the chance to talk with them, and I get to read their books before anyone else.
That's great. So, well, you tell Neil hello for me.
Absolutely.
Okay?
I love, Neil's one of my favorite.
Conversations with God.
Well, he has a new book, What God Said, just published last week also, same week as mine, and it's the best of the three books, Conversations with God.
He's so relaxing to talk to.
Yeah,
isn't he?
And he's so wise. Very wise.
He really is.
To God.
That's right. Well, you've talked to God, you're going to get wise. There's no doubt about it. We're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM with final phone calls. Don't touch your dial. On our next Coast to Coast program, Eldon Taylor joins us. We're going to talk about choices we make in our lives. Up next, more calls with Bill Gladstone on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Bill Gladstone with us, your calls as well. Bill, once again, you've done a great job here.
Well, it's always fun being on the show with you, George. You just have great questions, and you know what you're talking about.
I look forward to your next book, just to have you on again.
Well, I do plan on writing at least one book every 2 years. I got a lot of other things I'm doing, but I've been told that The Power of 12, my new book, is my best one yet. The reviews, you know, the book was just published on Tuesday, so I'm just getting the reviews now. But it really was a lot of fun to write, and it really does have some interesting characters. And, you know, if you're interested in the Illuminati, if you're interested in, you know, the idea of walk-ins, one of the chapters, the original title was going to be The Belching Bush, because I make a lot of fun out of former President George W. But, you know, it's even-handed. I'm not really that involved with politics.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, people from, you know, either party will enjoy it. And it seems particularly timely. The book was actually published on the day that the federal government shut down.
Oh, boy.
Coincidence or not,
yeah.
I don't know. But I do sort of cast aspersions on the present status quo. And I think that, you know, Coast to Coast listeners in particular will really resonate with the underlying themes of the novel.
Do you sometimes feel like we're on a roller coaster and if you don't hold on, you're going to fall out?
Absolutely. I think that every one of us is being challenged right now. Even when good things happen, they almost happen too suddenly. And the real key to human existence is balance. I mean, that's what the big cycles are about, and that's what our individual cycles are about. We need balance in our lives. And if we can, you know, as Kipling said, you know, not in, in that wonderful poem, if you know,
I
look
love
at
that.
Both, you know, victory and defeat the same, then my son, you'll be a man. And, you know, same for women. I mean, it really is not getting too high with the highs or too low with the lows, not overreacting to negative things that are going on, and not going into a Pollyanna state when something good happens and thinking, oh, your problems are solved. Being human is a constant challenge. It's a joy, but there's also sorrow. No matter what happens, we are all going to die in terms of our physical bodies. And there's sadness there. We're going to lose people we love. We're going to have challenges. And life is about taking the highs and the lows and just experiencing everything, even the sadness when it comes fully. And in doing so, your spiritual being will reap the rewards. And my own experience from having had a near-death experience is we are, in fact, eternal spiritual beings. So ultimately, there's no reason not to be an optimist.
It's funny you mention if, because I've got that poem on my bulletin board in my office, and I sent a copy to my son when he got to a certain age.
Yeah, it just captures so well. It's a very wise poem, and we need wisdom right now. I think that what we need more than cleverness and smart is wisdom. And wisdom is different. Wisdom comes with experience, it comes with age, and it comes with respect for others and for the natural environment. And that's really, to me, where we need to be focusing.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, to the phones we go. Final calls. Gary is in Sacramento. Welcome to the show. Hi, Gary.
Oh, thank you very much. I'd like to request permission to board the bridge.
You can come aboard.
The University of the Universe. Bill, thank you. Thank you very much. I'll make this real quick. I discovered part of the meaning of life one night when I had being robbed and a gentleman had a gun at my head. And all of a sudden, I felt this overwhelming love for my wife, my daughter, my family. And I'm looking down this gun barrel right into this man's eyes. I can't believe it. I still can't believe the experience, but it was real. And I'm telling this man how we were one.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't kill me. He got quite a bit of money. But it showed me the meaning of life. In the end, it's how much we've loved. And you've been talking and telling us that, you know. And, you know, I coined a new word tonight. Maybe our problem, instead of living spirituality, we're living in an egoality.
Maybe. And, that's a good point. Might be. Gary, let me ask you real fast, though. Did you ever feel any animosity to the guy afterward?
I hope your listeners believe me. No. I'm in gratitude for that man.
Believe you.
I did find out that he tried to rob some other people, and he was killed. And, you know, bless his soul.
Karma guy.
But it taught me a lot that night. And I'd like to say one thing.
Sure.
Our hopes in our children, and I have a 3.5-year-old grandson, and I call him my spiritual advisor. And we need to be present with our youth. And we need to learn to listen, to listen to learn, to learn to hear to see. By that I mean we're really learning to hear with our hearts. And we've got to do this right now, because every time I'm with my grandson, since the day he was born, we can pop into this universal consciousness, and it's just levity. Mm-hmm. And I can watch him. I can watch this energy out of a 3-year-and-a-half-year-old young man. Huh. And it's so powerful. It's that same power that we have as human beings that, you know, in Princeton, I learned from you, you know, we're bending light.
Mm-hmm.
With our minds and the random number generator, I think that our collective consciousness, we are probably one of the most powerful sources of being in this whole universe. And if we wake up, just, you know?
Well said.
Absolutely. It's interesting you say if we wake up. The main theme in The Power of 12 is the Project Wake Up, which is trying to be birthed. And the Illuminati is trying to crush it. You're absolutely right. It's about waking up. I take walks on the beach, and I live by a state park, and I see the young children, and you just see the joy and the vibrancy. They build their sandcastles. They jump into the water. I'm talking about 3-, 4-, 6-year-olds. And you just see this energy and this innocence and this love of life. We need to cultivate this and not beat it out of these young people. And you know, they have as much to teach us at this point in our evolution as a human species as we have to teach them.
Could you forgive a guy who robbed you at gunpoint?
You're talking to me?
Yeah, you.
I don't know if I would forgive or not forgive. I wouldn't be that concerned about that person other than controlling them so that they couldn't do that to other people. I happen to have grown up with a paranoid, violent, schizophrenic brother who used to beat me quite severely. He's not in good health right now. He's been able to stay out of mental asylums most of his life. I have a lot of compassion for him. I don't really like to have much interaction with him. He's violent. He's dangerous. I don't blame him anymore. As a child growing up, I certainly had my periods of, you know, I just didn't understand why I was forced to experience such brutality. But you do reach a point where, yes, I forgive, but I don't forget. And there is evil in the world, and evil does need to be contained.
All right, let's take a few more calls here. Bob's in New York on the wild card line. Bob, go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
From listening to stories from the Native American friends I have and from reading the Bible, it seems that the Creator has told us that as long as there's one family in an area doing this, the spiritual principles and following those that have been set down for eons, that he won't destroy the whole earth. From what I understand, from what I've been told, there's going to be catastrophes, but it's basically because the earth is sandpaper, and we're here to be smoothed off so when we rub against each other, we don't give each other slivers. And, you know, the earth is the Garden of Eden, but you have to be able to see it. And one other thing I have to say is that my observation since the last winter solstice is that it seems to be that there's more spirits coming into the world from the other side. At least either I'm seeing more or the veil, you know, there more is coming or I'm just being able to see more. And I've also noticed that some of them are being flinched by the people that are able to see them because they don't think they can be seen, and then they realize they're being seen, and then they scoot away or they disappear.
I think you make a good point. I mean, one of the main things at this end of the Mayan calendar and the beginning of the new cycle is that the veil is getting thinner, and those who are able to see are starting to see more. Also, to your point about the Native American and the Bible saying that as long as one just family, there's an ancient tradition from the Jewish faith of the 36 people that carry the burden of integrity for all of humanity. And as long as these 36 people remain on the planet is also protected. So it's an ancient belief that appears in many different cultures. And it's related to my own studies about the nature of 12. 36 is a, you know, 3 times 12. And 12 is kind of a sacred number that's at the basis of many of our religious institutions and also our governmental institutions.
Through some of these indigenous civilizations, was there one that was a little more spiritually advanced than the other?
Well, there's been so many that, you know, they're different. I mean, on different levels. I mean, the Vedic tradition in India was very powerful spiritual tradition, which, you know, is probably a longer longevity than any other tradition that we're aware of. Obviously, the Egyptian, and also from what I have studied, I believe pre-Mayan spiritual traditions were very, very strong. But it's very hard to compare, you know, different traditions. I think that at the basis, many of these indigenous cultures had equal spiritual power.
Let's go to Ed in Seattle, Washington, first-time caller. Ed, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Good evening, George. Like your show a lot.
Thank you, Ed.
Well, I'm driving a truck.
Great.
I'm home now, but I'm wondering if Mr. Gladstone would think that a financial catastrophe may be coming.
Absolutely, I think that a financial catastrophe is coming. I think that it could be coming much faster than any of us imagine. I have a client, Tom Hartman, who's just written a book, comes out next month, called The Crash of 2016. He's predicting 2016 as the financial disaster. Could come even sooner than that. There's a lot of instability going on, and the fact that, you know, we're just printing money as we need it without anything really backing it. It's, you know, you can just play that game so long, and eventually we're going to see a financial collapse.
No matter what, huh?
I actually think, yes, no matter what. I mean, it can be delayed, but at some point there's going to need to be just a resetting of the table. There's going to need to be a forgiveness of debt, and just, you know, a totally new economic system is going to have to evolve, because I think that the present economic system is being kept alive by special interests and fantasies about, you know, the nature of money that are unconnected to true productivity.
Penny's in Kansas and now on Coast to Coast. Hi, Penny.
Hi. You made the remark about that you felt like there was some people here on Earth that might have had a clip put in their head, and they're talking and telling people what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example. My son, when he was 6 years old, had surgery because he was an epileptic that had to have the surgery to help stop the seizures. At that time, when he came home, he told me he heard voices. And they were telling him about things that were going to be happening. I'll tell you the main ones he predicted. When the shuttle blew up, the first one, he heard, Mama, come quick, they're going to blow it up. I said, who's going to blow it? The voices said it was going to blow it up, and it blowed up.
That was the Challenger.
Yes.
Yep.
Then on 9/11, now my son was a civil engineer. He went to college for it. And he said there was no way that plane caused that building to fall. He said that had to be brought down with explosives of some kind, because the building went straight into the ground. Otherwise, the belly would have tipped over.
Well, Penny, he's not alone with that theory.
Yeah, in The Power of 12, I allude to the improbable nature of the explanation we've been given for 9/11. I think you're onto something.
I still am baffled by Building 7.
Mm-hmm.
That truly wasn't really hit that much. Definitely not by planes. Maybe rubble. But buildings just don't fall that way, you know? They really don't. I had Jesse Ventura on about 7 months ago, and he was on this weekend with John Wells, and we were talking about Kennedy and all that stuff, and he's convinced something else happened to him. So many other people are. I don't know if we'll ever get the answers, Bill, which is another question. They hide the answers, and we never find them. How come?
That is a very good question, because it defies logic. You can't keep the truth hidden forever. If a certain number of people actually know what happened, and it's been recorded, and even if it's under lock and key, at some point, on a logical basis, someone's going to break the code and reveal the information. So I think that, unlike Jesse, I believe that eventually we will know the truth about many of these incidents.
What was it, Lincoln who said you can fool most of the people some
of
the
time?
Most of
the time, but not all of the people.
But not all of the people all of the time.
Yeah, no, I think that a lot of truth is going to be coming out. I think that's part of what this end of the Mayan calendar is about, this new cycle. Truth is going to be more important than it's been for the last 2,000 years. Truth is not, though we give lip service to the truth, the people in power have not really been that interested in sharing the truth, and I think that's got to change.
It does indeed. Minute to go. William, please once again mention your works.
Well, williamgladstone.org is the best website to see my blog, find out about my books, The 12, The Power of 12, and tappingthesourcemovie.com for people that are interested in a nice, inspiring movie. But williamgladstone.org is the best site.
Where are you living these days? Whereabouts?
I'm in Cardiff, California, Cardiff by the Sea, playing golf and tennis 3-4 times a week, still representing authors and still writing. And despite some of the negatives of age, this is probably the happiest decade of my life. It's really gratifying to have a lot of good friends and to have creative work, which I enjoy.
You know, the best day of your life is the one you woke up to.
Absolutely. Well, I have a friend, Richard Cohen of Beyond Words, in our movie. He says, well, I wake up every day, and that's a good thing.
He's right. William, thanks. You take care of yourself.
Okay, you too. It was a pleasure being on your show, George.
Come back again. What a great guy. Website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Jonathan Howell, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, John B. Wells, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.